Blog Talk Radio.
Who are the unstoppable ones?
Is it just that they can do it and I can't? Mission Unstoppable. Mission Unstoppable.
The Unstoppable Ones.
You did say Unstoppable, right? You did say Unstoppable, right? What is it they know that I don't? Coach Frankie Picasso takes you on Mission Unstoppable.
Who are the Unstoppable Ones?
Can anyone stop these people?
I am the unstoppable Frankie Picasso, and tonight we are going on another Mission Unstoppable into the world of unconditional happiness. Yeah, for many it's a foreign world, a place they either dared not or could not go. But tonight I have with us an expert guide, a woman who not only shares with us evidence that we can be happy, but we can be happy for absolutely no reason at all. Imagine that. So stay tuned, stay close, and we will meet her in one moment. Today is Tuesday, March 3rd. You are on Mission Unstoppable Radio with the unstoppable Frankie Picasso. The time is 8 p.m. in New York, 7 in Chicago, and 5 in Los Angeles. I'd like you all to join me in just for one moment to send out your love and healing thoughts to my stepmom, Dodie Mann, who an hour ago was undergoing surgery today for cancer of her pancreas. Let's ask the universe to shine its love and mercy down on her to gift her with a complete recovery and as little pain as possible. Thank you. I want to thank the good folks here also at Blog Talk Radio for allowing me to broadcast over their network, and I especially want to thank you, you know who you are, for tuning in each and every week. My guest tonight is Marcy Shymoff, and she's one of the most loved and sought-out authors on the planet. She's the woman's face of the biggest self-help book phenomenon in history. Her books, including Chicken Soup for the Woman's Soul and Chicken Soup for the Mother's Soul, have sold over 13 million copies. And now her runaway best-selling book, Happy for No Reason, 7 Steps to Being Happy from the Inside Out, is being translated into 28 languages, and tonight we get to celebrate with her the debut of the paperback edition, which has just been released and is making another splash on the bestseller list. Marcy's a featured teacher in the hit movie The Secret. She's hosted the PBS special also titled Happy for No Reason, and though she has a million reasons to be happy, she's rubbed noses with the who's who, was a sought-after motivational speaker, a best-selling author, she realized that her successes didn't make her happy. Something was still missing, and I suppose we are indebted to her for her unhappiness and her unstoppable style, for it forced her to research and search for what some might say is the holy grail of life, the ability to be happy for no reason. So please welcome Marcy Shymoff to Mission Unstoppable Radio. Good evening, Marcy.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be happy for great reason to be here with you. How fun.
Yeah, how fun. And Marcy has been on the go since 5 o'clock this morning. She's doing a great big release of her book. You know, it's a debut. She's traveling around. She's going crazy. So, she might even sound a little bit like she's talked all day because she has.
Well, the only thing that I'm going to have to ask you is about halfway through, I might have to ask you, did I already tell you that story?
Yeah, that's okay. That's okay. Yeah, you probably told it a million times. That's okay. Good stuff. It's all good stuff.
Yeah.
Marcy, I wanted to say I truly, really and truly loved your book. I was told about it a year ago by a mentor who actually made it the prerequisite to work with him.
I have to know who that is.
I'll tell you off air.
Okay, how exciting. It's fantastic. You know, I've had people come up to me and say, I was in a college class and your book was required reading for me. And I'm thrilled. My goodness, that's great.
Yeah, how great is that?
So you had a mentor who made you read the book before you worked with him?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Everybody read the book. Yep, absolutely. And, you know, Marcy has this wonderful, easy style. She's got a wonderful, you know, written voice, and I know that you shared some of that with Carol Klein, who co-authored the book with you. But you know,
who people don't know but has been my best friend for 31 years.
Wow. That's
so I'm really lucky that the woman that I collaborated with on the book was my college best friend. And so it's great.
I think it says a lot about who you are, Marcy, to have somebody in your life that long and to share, you know, your successes with them. I think it's really great. I was going to say that you're really likable. You know,
oh, thank you.
Yeah, you know, we look at you and go, gee, she's got so many great things going for her. I should be jealous of her, but I can't. Too likable.
Well, thank you. You know, the thing that I really know is that I've been very blessed to have amazing experiences. I've met remarkable people. My life has unfolded in ways that I just can't imagine. But the bottom line is, people are people, and everybody, no matter what your experience is, and I've gotten to meet some very, very, very famous people, and everybody's dealing with the same stuff. Fame, money, status, power is no advantage when you're dealing with happiness.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be. Now, you know, you start off in the book and you talk about that only 30% of people in North America are happy. And like, these are really staggering statistics. And somehow you actually had to struggle to find 100 truly happy people.
Oh, my God, it was really hard. And, you know, that statistic about only 30% of people in North America are happy, that was before September. After September, I'd say it's even worse. You know, at the time, one out of five women in North America was on antidepressants. It's gone up. The calls to suicide hotlines have gone up. As the economy gets worse, you know, as the economy goes down, people's moods go down. People's happiness goes down. And that's what I think, that's why Happy for No Reason is more important now than ever before, because we are really in a situation where we've got to find an internal state of happiness that's unshakable, that isn't dependent upon the ups and downs of the world.
Well, you know, you started in The Secret, and everybody who was in The Secret that I saw, from Abraham Hicks to whoever, they all say that the purpose of life is joy. And yet it's one thing that eludes so many people. And this idea, and I really meant it when I said this may be the holy grail, is this ability to just be happy, an internal state of happiness that doesn't depend on what's happening outside, doesn't depend how much money you have, who you know, or anything like you just said. It just depends on you're at peace and in love with the world. You're just happy.
And it really is the most important thing in life, because I tell you what, if you ask anybody why they want something, the answer will always boil down to, because I think it will make me happy. You know, why do you want a better job? Why do you want a better husband? Why do you want anything? It's because you think that getting that thing will give you happiness. Well, the reality is that we as human beings have a very bad ability to assess what will make us happy in the future. And that as soon as you get what you thought was going to make you happy, it might help for a little bit. But very shortly after the joy of it has worn off, you're going to return to your original happiness level. So anytime we're trying to get our happiness from anything, any circumstance, it's a recipe for failure. And really, what I think is the great blessing of this time is that it's a wake-up call for everybody to go, uh-oh, I better find this some peace within, because I don't want to live being being sort of thrown around by the winds of the economy or society or whatever. I want to have this inner state of peace that's unshakable.
Absolutely. So you found this happy 100.
Yes.
So, Marcy, what do they all have in common? And maybe I should ask you, what do we mean by happiness first?
Oh, good question. I love that. You know, most people talk about happiness they say, let me just gather up all the good things, all the goodies in life, and then I'll be happy. And there's nothing wrong with the goodies, but it's what I call happy for good reason, and it can always go away. That's why it's just not lasting. When I talk about happiness, I'm talking about actually a neurophysiological state. It can be measured. It's a neurophysiological state of peace and well-being that doesn't depend on our circumstances. So it has to do with your brain waves. Your brain activity is different. A happy person has more activity in their left prefrontal cortex than their right prefrontal cortex. If you got a lot of activity going on in your right prefrontal cortex, you're worried a lot, you've got a lot of anxiety. So these are physiological things that we could hook you up right now to all kinds of monitors and tell if you were functioning like one of my happy 100. Another indicator is that they have heart rhythm coherence, which we can talk about a little later, but it's just when your heart rhythms are going in a very coherent pattern. They also have a biochemistry of happiness. They have a good serotonin and dopamine balance. They have endorphins. They have oxytocin. So it's really not, it's not just an airy-fairy idea. It's a real physiological state.
So specific and measurable. We can do this. So we know what's going on in their body, but what's going on in their head?
Well, here's the thing. You asked me what was the difference between happy people and everybody else. The only difference is that people who are unconditionally happy and people who are unhappy is that they have different habits. And their habits fall into seven main areas, which is why I called it seven steps to being happy from the inside out. And let me just give you a quick overview of the seven main areas, because I think it's important. A lot of people say, oh, you can just decide to be happy. And that's not true. You can no more decide to be happy and wake up tomorrow morning happy than you can decide to be a great piano player and wake up tomorrow morning being a great piano player. Unless you're a prodigy, it's not going to happen. You have to do the practices. You have to build the skill. And it's the same with happiness. You have to build your happiness muscles through doing certain habits. And the habits fall into these seven main areas. The first area has to do with taking responsibility for your life rather than showing up like a victim. The second area has to do with your mind and your thoughts. The third area has to do with your heart and your feelings. Fourth area is your body. Fifth area is your soul or spirit. Sixth area is your sense of purpose or passion in life. And the seventh area is the area of your relationships. And, you know, I know that people can't remember all seven of those very easily, so I created a metaphor. I call it building your inner home for happiness. And it's easier to remember this way because a home has seven main components. It has a foundation, four corner pillars, a roof, and a garden. And those are the seven main components. They're correlated. The foundation is taking responsibility. The four corner pillars are the pillars of the mind, the heart, the body, and the soul. The roof is your sense of purpose in life, and the garden is your relationships. You know, who are you surrounding yourself with? Are you surrounded by weeds or by roses and gardenias?
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah, so, okay, you know, I wanted people to be able to say, if they were wanting to repeat this to their family members, yeah, there are these seven areas. Foundation, mind, body, heart, soul, purpose, and garden is relationships.
Beautiful. So it doesn't matter where we are, how old we are, anyone can learn to be happy?
I've gotten letters. The original Happy for No Reason book came out a year ago, and I've gotten thousands of emails from people from around the world. I've gotten six at least, and we probably need to go back and track this better, but we got six that were from people who said, I was going to take my life, and then someone gave me your book. And it changed my life. So we have people who are really, really, really at the depths of a depression or despair. And then I've gotten letters from people saying, you know what? I was already really, really happy, but I read your book and it did two things for me. It helped me understand why I was happy. And I did some of the things in there you said, and I became even happier. So it really is for anybody, where no matter where you're starting on this happiness scale.
People are telling me that I'm a little soft, so I'm just going to unplug the head, and I'm on here, and hopefully you guys can hear me better now. There's those of you who are in the chat room telling me that I'm a little too soft. So here I am.
I thought they were telling you that you were being too easy on the questionings of me. Oh, you're just too soft on her.
I'm too soft on her. You know, I love this idea that you bring up about the Teflon versus Velcro. But let's talk about, just before we talk about that, what stops us from being happy? I mean, we all want to be happy, maybe.
Yes, we do. Ultimately, it is the ultimate human desire. And what stops us or what blocks us is our old habits that don't support our happiness. Habits of being a victim, of complaining, of blaming, of feeling guilty, our thought patterns. Our resentments that we hold on to, the anger we hold in our heart, how we don't take time for connecting in with our spirit, how we don't do things for our bodies that will support our happiness, how we surround ourselves with people who are negative and dragging us down, the emotional vampires. So all of those things are the ways in which we're blocking our happiness.
Okay. So the idea of this Teflon versus Velcro is that negativity sticks to the Velcro and our happiness falls off like it does off Teflon. Why?
Yeah, so here I call it the Velcro Teflon syndrome. And it has to do with the fact that we have a negativity bias. It's built into our systems, basically, from our caveman days when we had to remember all the things that were, all the dangers that were out there, and they had to really stick to us so we wouldn't forget to play it safe. Nowadays, it's not like that. We don't have the same kinds of dangers that we were dealing with then, and yet we still remember the negatives far more than we remember the positives.
Oh, yeah.
For example, if you get 10 compliments in a day, and one criticism, what do you remember?
You remember the criticism, and I love that story about you speaking to that big group of people.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I'll tell the story.
Tell that
story. Here's what happens.
Please.
You know, the negative things just Velcro to us. They stick to us, and the positive things are like Teflon. They slide off of us. So we you know, it's so much easier to believe the negative. So I was giving a talk many 10 years ago, and I had an audience of maybe 500 people, and everyone was laughing and smiling and having a great time, except this one guy in the front row who was sitting there with his arms crossed, and he had just this kind of scowl on his face, and I was convinced that this guy was hating everything I was saying, and he was hating me, and I made myself miserable. During that entire talk, I was ignoring the 499 people that were just totally into it, and I was putting all my attention on this one guy in the front row that I couldn't get to crack a smile. And it really ruined my enjoyment of that talk. Well, at the end of the talk, you know, people always come up to you afterwards and say hi, and he made a beeline for me, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, my God, this guy is just going to lambast me that, you know, maybe he's a scientist, and I misquoted a statistic or a fact. I was just really not looking forward to what he was going to say. And he gets right up to me, and he puts his arm out, and he shakes my hand, and he said, Marcy, that talk changed my life.
Wow.
And I said, what? He said, I was so into everything you were saying. I heard every word you were saying, and boy, oh boy, that hit home so deeply. I can't tell you how important that was, and I'm going to go share this message and I'm with my family, and I am going to make changes in my life right away.
Wow.
And my jaw just dropped open. I said, really? I thought you weren't enjoying it. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, you were sitting there with your arms crossed, and he said, no, Marcy, I was just totally engaged in everything you were saying. Well, you know, it made me realize how my moods are, how my happiness has so often tied to what I think people are thinking of me or what's going on outside of me that may or may not even be true.
That's
and
right.
So it's really important to learn to question our thoughts.
Well, you blamed him for your unhappiness.
That's right.
Yeah.
I did everything wrong. I did.
Yeah.
That was the perfect example of what not to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that poor man.
And that's why, you know, in the book, I'm Happy for No Reason, I put in tools or techniques that anyone can use to really help dissolve those old patterns of negative thinking. You know, I love the fact that we live in a time when there are fantastic techniques out there that you can learn in 10 minutes that really can help. Like one of them is called The Work by Byron Katie. And it's a simple process of asking yourself four questions. And it helps you really question your negative thoughts. There's another tool that I put in there by a friend of mine, Hale Dwoskin, of the Sedona Method. Beautiful, simple system for releasing any negative thoughts and feelings that may be old patterns that are holding you back. And his technique is done through something that's, you know, counterintuitive for how we live, and that is to welcome in whatever you're feeling rather than resisting or fighting it. You know, most people think if you've got something that's negative, you better push it away. You better push it away. Well, the Sedona method is saying quite the opposite. It's saying allow it, welcome it, let it be. And as you do that, you will see that it very easily tends to dissolve. It loses its power over you.
It does, because, you know, as we all know that, you know, the things that we fear, we resist them, and as soon as we face our fears, they dissolve.
Right.
And so as long as you're running and keeping away from it, it's always going to chase you. But my favorite one, I think, is the solution focus. As a coach, I think, you know, for me, that's where I naturally gravitate to, being, you know, this positive person all the time anyway, and
right.
finding the good in everything. So finding, you know, what is good about this instead of what's bad. Changing perspective.
Changing perspective. You know, one of the things that I discovered around in interviewing my Happy 100 is that they all had this overriding feeling that this is a friendly universe that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
when you think, Einstein once said, the most important question you can ask yourself is this a friendly universe? And my Happy 100 would all answer yes. And what that means is that even when things aren't going their way or looking the way they would want them to look, they believe that nevertheless the universe is out to support them rather than out to get them. You know, so instead of feeling like, oh, why is this happening to me? You know, everything bad happens to me, feeling like a victim, they ask, why is this happening to me? What's the gift in this? If this were serving my highest purpose, what would that be? So here's a question that anyone listening can ask yourself if you're finding yourself in the midst of a challenging time. Ask, if this were happening for a higher purpose, what would that purpose be?
Mm-hmm.
If this were happening for a higher purpose, what would that purpose be? And
I love that.
It just changes your whole perspective.
It really does. And you talk about, you know, rejection is God's protection.
Oh, I love that.
Line.
Yeah,
what a
actually,
great line.
Yeah, my
Let's tell
agent.
That story.
Well, my agent, my literary agent, who I just think the world of, she's fantastic. She, early on when I first met her, she and I were going somewhere, and I know what it was. I submitted my book proposal to her ages ago. Before it was Happy for No Reason, when it was just another little book title thing that I had come up with. And she sent it back to me and said, no, this isn't good enough. This won't work. And I was really, in the beginning, upset. And she said, Marcy, you've got to remember that rejection is God's protection. And that if it's a no, it's only the universe supporting you in some way, God protecting you in some way. And I, a year later, came back to her with the proposal for Happy for No Reason, and it was just light years better than the original book that I had proposed to her. And had she let me go forward with the other book, it would have not been serving me in any way. Well, at the time, it felt like it was, you know, the universe, oh, my God, why is this happening to me? Why isn't my agent taking my book idea? But it was the universe's beautiful guidance of me to something that was even greater waiting for me.
And it's so true, and it always works out that way. And if we just learn to look at things that way, you know, we talk about, I always talk about the, you know, what would love do now in this situation? Well, if that rejection comes as love, that's the universe love coming to you saying, just wait, something better's on its way.
Yeah.
It's going to make space and allow something better to come.
Absolutely. It ultimately boils down to a feeling of faith that all is well, that the universe is really, that there is some greater plan, and that we are being used as part of this greater plan. And the more that we sort of relax into just following our inner guidance, and always knowing that what's happening is happening for the highest good, boy, better off we are, the more our lives become just a magical expression of our divine purpose.
Wow. Let me just say hi to those in the chat room this evening. It's good to see you. John it's great to see John Von Newding. He's in there, and he's from London, England. Welcome, John and Jared. If you'd like to join in the conversation, you can call us, 646-595-3741, and, you know, we're happy to chat with you as well as with Marcy. You talk about the guiding three, and we started off saying that the happy 100 believe that the universe is out to support you. Whatever expands you makes you happier. And so you talk about using your internal GPS system, your internal guidance system, and to ask yourself, do I feel good doing this or don't I? Does this make me feel better, doesn't it? And choosing the one that makes you feel good. And then you talk about whatever you appreciates getting better is using the law of attraction. You want to talk about those a little bit?
Absolutely. So the first guiding principle is based on the principle of expansion and contraction, that everything in the universe, there are only two energies. There's the energy of expansion, or love, and there's the energy of contraction or fear. Everything else is derivative of those two. And whenever we're moving in the direction of expansion, we're always moving in the direction of our of greater happiness. So one exercise you can do is to just make a list on the right-hand side of the piece of paper, everything that makes you feel contracted. On the left-hand side of the piece of paper, everything that makes you feel expanded. And just do a little bit more each week in the category of what makes you feel expanded. Or during your day, ask yourself, what's going to make me feel more expanded right now? Now, that doesn't mean that you don't go through things that are challenging, and temporarily you may feel, afraid or contracted, because any change generally requires breaking through some old boundaries. So I'm not meaning running away and playing it safe, but I mean in the bigger context. What really is serving your highest good, and that's whatever will make you feel expanded.
Yeah. You know, we talk about, or you talk about in the book, is it DNA versus environment? And I interviewed Dr. Bruce Lipton and just absolutely loved him so much.
Oh, isn't he great? I loved him too.
Yeah.
He's cool. He's fabulous.
He's like a runaway train.
Oh, my God. You cannot stop him. He is just woo. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was great. So the idea of, DNA versus environment is really interesting and important. We talked about how people who live in the same household can get the same diseases, even if they're not related, even though DNA isn't even there. So the DNA about being happy, you say that it's in our DNA, to default to the negative in some respects or to be happy. But there's also there's another 50% of that quotient that allows us the ability to change our lives and be happy. So let's talk about that.
Right. Well, I think what some of the most interesting part of the research on happiness has to do with this idea that we all have a happiness set point. And most people are familiar with the idea of the fact that we have a weight set point. You know, you get to be around a certain weight and you kind of stick around that weight unless you do make some changes, significant changes in your habits. Well, same is true in happiness. You have a happiness set point that we tend to hover around the same happiness level no matter what happens to us, based on this set point, unless we do something to change it. And so, for example, people who win the lottery, which you think, oh, man, that's going to help anyone's happiness. And it does for about 3 months. Within a year of winning the lottery, it turns out that the lottery winners have returned to their original happiness set point. And amazingly, the same is true of people who have become paraplegic. Within a year, they've also returned to their original happiness set point. So it's, in fact, I was giving a talk about a month ago, and a woman came up to me in the book signing line. She was in a wheelchair. She'd been in an accident 5 years earlier and become paraplegic. And she was so happy. And I said, so you're happy, aren't you? She said, yeah, I'm really happy. I said, what's your secret? She said, I was happy before the accident. I'm happy after the accident. You take your happiness with you wherever you go.
Oh,
and
I love it.
That is the truth. It's our happiness set point that matters. And the happiness set point is 50% genetic. It's your DNA. You're born with it. It's 10% your circumstances. Now, that's a really small percent. It's only 10% your circumstances, yet that's what we focus all of our attention on. The other 40% is your habits of thoughts and behavior. And that's the part we can really do something about to raise our happiness level. Now, I'm so glad you mentioned Bruce Lipton, because while the traditional scientists say that 50% that's genetic can't be changed, I believe what the more progressive scientists like Bruce Lipton are saying, which is we even change our genetics. We change our DNA when we change our habits of thoughts and behavior. So if that's the case, then 90% of our happiness set point can be changed by changing our habits. You know, that's an amazing thing. You're not just born happy-go-lucky. You know, there's no luck to being happy. There's some luck, but it's really a matter of your habits. And
you know what, Marcy?
Yeah.
Go ahead, sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, people get on an exercise program or they get on all these programs to do things. Get on a happiness program. Get a happiness buddy and get on a happiness program because that's going to change your life more than anything else.
Yeah. You know, the idea of having that that you know, the cup half full or half empty.
Right.
It really came home to me. I was in a rehab hospital, and I was looking around at these people and going, you know, what makes some people do the exercise and feel that everything's going to be okay, and what makes other people feel like it's not going to ever, you know, life is over now because, you know, I have a hangnail.
Yeah.
And some people, you know, take things into just outrageous proportions, and other people just, you know, go with the flow and everything's cool. Now, I wanted to ask you, because I asked everybody there, you talk about in your book about your dad, and your dad was an innately happy person.
Yes.
What was your mom?
Not happy.
My mom,
my dad was the happiest guy I ever knew. He passed away when he was 91, a couple years ago, and woke up every morning with a smile on his face. And I remember one time I was 19. I said, "So, Dad, what's your best advice for life?" He said, "Honey, just be happy." And I looked at him. I said, "So, Dad, you were born that way. I wasn't. What do I do?" He looked at me and said, "Honey, I don't know." He had no idea what made him happy. He just was. And he couldn't understand anything else. My mother, on the other hand, is a wonderful woman, but she was not happy. Now, she is 87 now, and she's actually become incredibly happy. So it's never too old to have these changes happen. She's like a different person. I can't believe it. But I will honestly say that I believe that her lack of happiness was partially physiological. I think that she didn't have the right endorphins and serotonin and the right biochemistry. And back when she was unhappy, people didn't know what to do about it. She didn't have the advantages that we have now of being able to say, "Hey, you just need some vitamins or amino acids or omega-3 fatty acids or things that are really from a very holistic and healthy standpoint going to help boost your physiological state of happiness." So,
well, that's really important that you talk about that, because let's talk about that a little bit. We talk about sleep, how important sleep is. You know, Catherine Oxenberg, you know, one of your friends, one of the people that you mentioned in the book, who we thought, gosh, she's got everything. She's got looks. She's, you know, daughter of a queen. She's got all this stuff. And yet here she was extremely unhappy in her life because of lack of sleep, lack of nutrition, lack of, you know, some really...
She had low serotonin. Yeah, Catherine, and her story is very compelling. Her she's a princess. Her grandfather was the king of Yugoslavia. She was film and TV star. She was in Dynasty. She had everything going. She's beautiful. She's a great husband, amazing kids, and I'm the godmother to her two babies. So her kids are really amazing. And yet she was very, very unhappy and throughout her life, as a matter of fact. And it was only recently that she discovered that she really had a low serotonin balance. And through making some physiological changes to her diet, to exercise, to sleep, to taking some supplements, some amino acids and various things like that, that she completely turned her life around. I mean, there was a point there where she just could barely get out of bed in the morning. And, you know, to make matters worse, anyone who feels that way, they then beat themselves up emotionally for feeling so bad. You know, you feel bad physically, and she felt bad emotionally as well. So I've incorporated, I think it's a really important piece to incorporate the body. And a lot of people skip over it. They go, "Oh, no, you know, it doesn't matter, just change your thoughts." No, you can't ignore the body. You have to take care of the body. As a matter of fact, there's some research done that shows that the amount of sleep and the quality of sleep that you got last night is more important in determining your happiness than your marital status or your income.
I totally believe that. I was one of those people. My doctor said, you know, you're going to get fibromyalgia. It's starting already because I wasn't sleeping. I was getting like 2 hours. I had a really sick dog, and like, you know, every 2 hours he woke me up. He needed insulin. He needed this and that. And finally, it was like a year later, he goes like, you know, it's the dog or you. You know?
Wow.
And it's horrible to be like that, but sleep is so important to us. And you know, having a holistic viewpoint, as you're talking about, is really important. For all of us, it's not just one thing. We have to, you know, zone, like you said, the seven steps where you got to go.
Yeah. And, you know, let me tell you a little tip about sleep. I find that most people don't know this, and that is that every hour of sleep you get before midnight is worth twice as much as the sleep that you get after midnight. So that means if you go to bed by 9:30 or 10, you're getting much greater, deeper value, deeper quality of sleep than if you go to bed later. So if someone is feeling a little down, I suggest that you go to bed three nights in a row by 9:30 and wake up on the fourth morning and call and tell me how you feel. I guarantee you'll feel like a new person.
Great advice. Listen, guys, great advice. You know, the show's going to be over at 9 o'clock. You can head out to bed.
There you go.
And you can feel lovely. There you go. Right away. Instant advice. I love it. One of the exercises that I found to be probably one of the most difficult and the most compelling was the mirror exercise. So
Ooh.
Many of us suffer from low self-esteem,
yeah.
especially women. And the idea of looking in a mirror, I mean, I had a portrait done once with a woman who does this whole big thing, and she says, you know, and I'm not going to take your picture until you look in the mirror and say, I love you, to yourself. And, you know, eventually she gave me a compact mirror. She goes, come on, you can find one thing that you can say I love you about, you know. And it was a really difficult exercise. You know, there's nothing, you know, I can't really say there's anything really wrong with me. Why wouldn't I like myself? I'm a great person, but it's really difficult. So let's talk about that mirror exercise and what it was like for you and what it's like for the people that you've interviewed.
Well, this is an exercise that I learned many, many years ago when I first started working with Jack Canfield, who's been my mentor and who's the creator of the Chicken Soup series. And I was taking a seminar with him, and he had all of us go in at night. We were supposed to go to the bathroom at the hotel we were staying in, look in the mirror, and basically whisper sweet nothings to ourselves. Basically tell ourselves, I appreciate you because you're so kind to people, and I appreciate you because you really do your best, and I appreciate you because you're funny and you make people laugh. And you would just talk to yourself and give yourself appreciation, and at the end you'd say, and I really love you. And I remember at the time, Carol Klein, who's my writer now, remember my college best friend, she was my roommate at that conference, and she would go in the mirror and close the door and talk into the mirror, and then I would go into the bathroom and close the door and talk into the mirror, and both of us, we just felt like some, you know, California woo-woo nutcases, and it was really hard to do because we're just so used to judging ourselves harshly, being so critical. And, you know, though it's trite, it's been said so many times, but the way that you treat yourself is going to be the way that you treat others. So it's really important to have compassion, appreciation, love, respect for ourselves. So it's a challenging exercise for people to do. As you said, you know, Frankie, you had a problem doing it. And I think it's a great exercise to do. Now, ultimately, I believe in appreciating yourself for no reason at all as well. So I think it's great that you look in the mirror and you appreciate yourself for being funny or kind or generous or whatever it is. But ultimately, the truest appreciation is appreciating yourself no matter what, even when you do mess up, even when you aren't the way you want to be or know that you can be. It's having compassion and love and care for yourself.
Well, let's talk then about gratitude, because that's one of the important ingredients for being happy, the idea of being grateful for the things in your life and for the people around you. Some of the exercises, some of the reasons for being grateful, having gratitude are?
Sure. Well, you know, I to me, gratitude is the fast track to happiness. For most people are familiar with the idea of the law of attraction, and in the law, what you put your attention on is what grows stronger in your life. And when you're grateful, you're putting your attention on what you want more of, and the energy flows very differently. And there's so many opportunities we have in a day to be grateful. I think I'm going to give you three things that I like to do. One is to wake up in the morning and immediately move into a state of gratitude. Just immediately be grateful for waking up. Be grateful for the day that's ahead. Be grateful for the amazing opportunities and amazing experiences that are ahead. The second time of day to be grateful is right before you go to sleep, because whatever you do right before you go to sleep is what programs you for your evening, for your night, and for the quality of your dreams. The third thing that you can do is throughout the day, take little pauses for gratitude. And I'll tell you a story from one of the Happy 100 that I interviewed, a Benedictine monk named Brother David Stenerost. And Brother David is in his 80s. He's an amazingly charming man. And he was in World War II. He was in Austria, and he was having to escape, and his mother would tell him, no matter what was going on, to focus on what they had and the appreciation. And he said sometimes they would live on grass soup, so soup that was, you know, made out of the grass. And even then, his mother taught him to focus on what to be grateful for. So later in life, he developed a little practice that that I think is a great one for anyone to adopt. And every day, he picks a theme for the day. And anytime he encounters that particular theme, he takes it as his cue to stop and just feel grateful for being alive, or feel grateful for whatever is going on. So, for example, today the theme might be water. And so every time he washes his hands or brushes his teeth, or he passes by a fire hydrant and it reminds him of water, he takes that as his cue to stop and just be grateful. And then the next day Yes?
I'm sorry. I know that you're limited on time, and I have a couple of questions here, so I just wanted to throw them at you if I could from the chat room.
Of course.
Two things. One, where does laughter come into the play in the Seven Habits, and does integrity come into play in the Seven Habits?
Wow. I've gotten the question about laughter before, but I've never gotten the question about integrity, and I love both of them. Laughter, 100%. Yes, yes, yes. It's nowadays, by the way, there are yoga laughter clubs around the world. Laughter yoga clubs, I think they're called. And you just go and you laugh.
I'm a laughter yoga leader.
You are?
I just told them. Yes, I am.
Oh, fantastic. So you know all about this. Well, laughter creates endorphins, and it just changes the whole energy. So laughter, 100%. Big, big time fan of laughter, and it's a big part of feeling happier. Now, integrity is a great question, because when we are out of integrity, there's an internal disconnect, and you cannot feel happy when you have an internal disconnect. You cannot feel happy when you are not living in integrity. So living in integrity is really key. It's really being aligned with your soul.
Yeah, being aligned with your values and
right.
your goals. Yeah,
right. Let me tell you a really quick story. I think you'll like this. I went to hear a woman named Angelus Arian speak a couple weeks ago. She's a wonderful cultural anthropologist who studies happiness across cultures. And she said when you go to indigenous cultures where there are shamans or medicine men or women, if somebody in the village comes to the shaman and is unhappy, the shaman will ask them four questions. When did you stop singing? When did you stop moving your body or dancing? When did you stop telling stories or sharing? And when did you stop taking silence?
Oh, wow.
Because they know that if you're unhappy, one of those things has stopped in your life. We need those four things. We need to sing. We need to express. And I mean, you don't have to be a great singer, but vocalizing. Second thing is you need to move your body. Get your body out there doing something that you love, exercise, dance, movement of some sort. The third thing is you've got to share. Telling stories has been something that people have done from throughout time. We've got to share with each other. And then the fourth thing is taking silence. We've got to take some time of silence, I think, every day, at least 10 minutes. to just
meditation, silence, or
meditation, prayer, walks in nature. I don't care what form of it you take, but a time to be going inward and not being so focused outward.
You know, it's interesting. I interviewed this doctor, and he was talking about how people who have had strokes and can't speak anymore can sing. It comes from a different part of the body. And
yes,
it's a way that they can express and get out, you know, and actually speak by singing rather than talking. So that's kind of cool, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm noticing my mother is starting to lose parts of her memory, you know, here and there. And yet she remembers songs, lyrics, from the 1930s, I'm blown away. She can't remember people's names that she had lunch with earlier in the day, but she can remember song lyrics from the 1930s. So our brains do work in mysterious ways.
You know, I'm trying to get all this in so quickly. The story about Happy Oasis, to me that was probably one of the most memorable, one of the most profound. Can you share it with us real quick?
Absolutely. So, one of my happy 100 is a woman named Happy Oasis. She was not given that name at birth, I will say. She took that name on. And she had grown up a really very sheltered life, I think, in California, and decided at age 19 to travel around the world. And she found herself, it was in the 1980s, she found herself in Bangladesh during the time of the really horrible monsoons and also the famine in Bangladesh. And she didn't really know what she was getting herself into. She found herself one day in Dhaka, the capital, and she got on a bus and she wanted to go out and visit the countryside. She was the only Westerner on this whole bus. They're driving along for hours and hours in the midst of a horrible rainstorm, and suddenly the area gets so flooded that the bus has to find a field, higher ground, in order to settle there, because otherwise they were going to get washed away. Well, they settle in, the bus parks, and everybody else on the bus gets off, except for Happy. She just sort of sits on the bus for a little while, and she looks out the window, and she sees bodies all around her. And at first, she thinks people are sleeping. But then she realizes, these are people who are dying. And in the midst of this, a very, very frail, emaciated man comes up to her window on the bus and knocks at her window. And he's got a big smile on his face. And it really, really makes her angry. She looks at him and snaps at him and says, "How could you possibly be smiling at a time like this?" And he looked at her and he said, "Madame, sometimes a smile is all that you have to share." And she just sort of turned her world around, and he motioned for her, and he said, "Now you come out and help me." And he spoke in perfect Queen's English. And she went off of the bus, and she spent the rest of the day walking around that field with that man. She called him the Happy Man. And he would kneel by people's sides as they were dying, and he would hold them or stroke them or just sing to them. He would sing to them in his native language and his native songs, and she would sing to him from the Christian songs that she remembered learning at Girl Scout camp or at Christian camp growing up. And she said that day taught her that even if you don't have much to give, a smile can be enough. And her whole life from then on has been dedicated to serving or giving in whatever way she can, attend to people in the moment, in exactly wherever the universe puts her. Here's where I'm supposed to be right now, giving whatever I can.
I mean, I absolutely cried. Yeah, that was
a beautiful story.
It really is. Let's talk about purpose, because I think all of us, you know, we definitely all have a purpose and a reason for being here. And when we live in purpose and we find it, then usually we're happy.
Right.
So how important did you find purpose to be for the Happy 100?
It was a big deal. You know, there are three ways of dealing with what you're doing in life. Either you're in a job, you're in a career, or you're in a calling. And people who are just going to their jobs and just doing it to get a paycheck are probably not anywhere near as happy as people who feel like they're in a career and they're doing it to further their career. But the happiest people were those who feel that they are in their calling, that they're doing what they are called here on this planet to do. And I believe that every single person is on this planet for a reason, and we're called here to do something. And it's different for everybody. You know, I happened to be in a hospital room a couple years ago when I was working on the book. I was visiting someone who was in the hospital. And the woman who changed the sheets, who came in to change the sheets, I noticed was incredibly happy. And I said, gosh, you seem so happy. What's your secret? And she said, I feel like I am helping people so much in what I'm doing. I'm coming, I'm making their beds more comfortable. Here they are, they're in the hospital and they're really uncomfortable, and I'm smiling with them and I'm sharing with them the best way that I can. This woman was in her calling. So it doesn't matter the role that you have, it matters that you are doing what you feel called to do.
I'm just putting your www.happyfornoreason.com is Marcy Shymoff's website. You want to go there. You want to look for her book. Order her book from the site, from Amazon. The paperback is out today. You probably see it in the number one. You know, probably in the top 10.
Well, it just catches like wildfire. What I say is, tell people is to buy it for your family members, buy it for your friends, buy it for your coworkers. And actually right now, if you go to www.happyfornoreason.com, I have all of my friends, over 200 people in the transformational world, like Jack Canfield and Marianne Williamson and Deepak Chopra and John Gray and Michael Beckwith, they've all giving free bonus gifts to help with this bestseller campaign, I guess you'd call it, because everyone is joining in right now to create, I believe, what we call a happiness revolution. We know how important happiness is. So if you go to the site, there's actually a wonderful little, some of the gifts, there's one gift that allows you to eliminate the number one belief that most blocks your happiness, and it's an online system to help you eliminate the number one belief that blocks your happiness. And there's the online passion test that you can take to see if you're following your life passion. And there is a de-stress kit, the HeartMath, Institute of HeartMath de-stress kit. All of those are free bonuses for people.
That's excellent. So, you know, run to the site right now. And we're just going to talk about one last thing, and then
sure.
I promise to let Mark go because she's on a really tight schedule here, and we're just so happy to have her. And that's the garden. And part of, you know, what you just said about sharing with your family and friends is surrounding yourself with people who want to be happy and who are happy. And you take your own advice. You've always belonged to groups, I guess, women who support one another through your life, and you seek them out and surround yourself with people who you know, share your same passion for happiness.
I really, really have experienced in my life the benefits of mastermind groups or support groups and of surrounding myself with happy people. You know, if you want to be a better tennis player, you go play tennis with people who are better than you. If you want to be happier, you go hang out with happy people, because it's going to rub off. We catch the emotions of the people around us like we catch their colds. And do you want to catch people's negativity or do you want to catch their positivity? And some people say that we become the average of the five people we most associate with. So if you just jot down on a little piece of paper who you spend the most time with, the five people, and ask yourself, do I want to catch their happiness or unhappiness? So I really think that it's important that we create relationships and surround ourselves with people who will support our happiness. And ultimately,
the energy field of the heart, right?
I'm sorry? The
energy field of the heart. You mentioned that in your book, and I think that goes along with that whole thought is, you know, the five people that you hang out with the most.
Yeah, it really affects us. And, you know, I really want to end on one concept that people are often saying, well, is it selfish to want to be happy? It's the least selfish thing you can do, because you influence the people around you more by who you are than by what you do, by how you show up as a being. And I believe that the best thing that anybody here can do for this planet of ours is to raise your own happiness level, to become happy for no reason yourself. And I'll just share with you a Chinese proverb that I love to share with all my, anytime I speak. It goes like this. It says, when there is light in the soul, there will be beauty in the person. When there is beauty in the person, there will be harmony in the house. When there is harmony in the house, there will be order in the nation. And when there is order in the nation, there will be peace in the world. And my prayer and my wish for each of us is that we feel the love and joy in our own hearts and lives, in our own souls. And through that, we create peace here on this planet of ours.
Wow, that's beautiful, Marcy. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. And thank you, everybody in the chat room and everybody who's listening tonight and will listen in the future. I hope that you you go to www.happyfornoreason and get the book right away. Get a couple of copies of it. Keep one for yourself. Keep it as you know, near and dear to you, because you can always check on it and find out if you're still happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, great. It's
Marcy,
so much fun to always be with you.
Thank you. Thank you. And great luck on the rest of your tour.
I appreciate it.
Stay happy.
And
bye
you
now.
Too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. So that was Marcy Shymoff, and she was our guest. She wrote Happy for No Reason. So tell me about you. Are you happy for no reason? Happiness is a decision. Jared, yes, it is. But it is also some work. Like we found out that part of it is part of our DNA, and the other part of it is that we need to work for it. We need to change our thoughts and feelings, and we need to do a little bit of work around happiness. But we have a happiness set point, and the good news is that we can raise that set point. How exciting is that? And where do we do that? Well, we do it in the subconscious, don't we? So that's you know, I'd love to hear from you. Kelvin, I see that you joined us. Great to see you here. Nice. He popped in and popped out. He's going to be on our show next week, I think. Kelvin is Gorilla Speaks. He wrote the book Gorilla Speaks. So tell me about you. Are you happy? Do you want to be happy? And, you know, we talked about earlier about making assumptions about people when Marcy spoke to this large group of people and she saw that one guy and it wrecked her whole day. She, you know, you need to take responsibility for your happiness. Toltec wisdom states, you know, don't make assumptions about people. You need to ask people instead of assuming, because when you react instead of respond to things, you find often most that it's not the best solution for you. So I guess that's about it for this evening. I want to thank all of you in the chat room for joining me. It's been a real pleasure spending this time with you, and it was great to speak with Marcy. I just can't tell you how much her book has affected me. And the people, my gosh, the people that she's interviewed in that book and that you're going to want to find out about and hear their personal stories, people that you would think, oh, they must be the happiest person in the world, Goldie Hawn. Master Lin, who I was going to train with, Spring Forest Kijang, he's in Minnesota. Elizabeth Gilbert, we've all seen her book, Eat, Pray, and Love. Jan Atwood, one of Marcy's best friends who wrote The Passion Test, with her ex-husband, no less. Rhonda Byrne, who is responsible for The Secret. Martha Beck, Mariel Hemingway, we talked about her. There's just so many stories and so many people in this book who we just take for granted that they must be really happy people, but they're not, or they are now because they learned to be happy. They learned what it meant. And part of that is being in service to others. Part of that is just feeling at peace with yourself. So on that note, I'm going to bid you adieu, and thank you for stopping in, and we'll see you next week on Mission Unstoppable. Stay unstoppable and be happy. Take care, everybody. Have yourself a great night wherever you are in the world. Bye-bye.